This is an NBC Sports Radio remote broadcast coming to you from Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. This is Pro Football Talk Live with Mike Florio. It's the NFL Combine Special on NBC Sports Radio. Now, Mike Florio.
Welcome to PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio. It's Friday here at the Scouting Combine in Indianapolis, Lucas Oil Stadium. And right out of the gates, here he is, Rams head coach Jeff Fisher. St. Louis for now. I think the whole league's going to move to L.A.
Yeah, let's see if we can get 32 teams in there between San Diego and San Francisco.
It would cut down on the travel costs.
I'd take Santa Barbara. How'd that be good?
Well, I know that that's out of your purview. Yeah. You're just coaching the football team wherever it may be, and you've been through this before. With a little jump from Houston to Nashville and wherever. How many different stadiums were you in Tennessee? Just two or three?
We were three. We were Memphis, Liberty Bowl, came back to Vanderbilt the next year, and then moved into what was referred to as Adelphia Coliseum.
So the
fourth was the one we had left at the Astrodome.
How hard is that to bounce teams around from stadium to stadium?
I have declined maybe 100 requests to write a book, because it was difficult, but you know what we did? We stayed focused on our football team, and we built a team, I think it was more than just a coincidence that when we got in the new stadium, we also went to Super Bowl that year, so we set the bar pretty high, but we were focused on our football, on our roster, and we didn't let those other things become a distraction.
Do you have guys on the team now asking you, hey, coach, where are we going to be, what are we going to do?
Yeah, on occasion. I mean, we got guys in the building right now, and you know, I didn't have any during the season, but you know, this is my philosophy on it. I haven't asked, so I don't know. So when I say I don't know, I'm telling the truth, and that's basically the position I'm taking. We are focused on football in St. Louis in 2015 and our football team. We can't control what happens. I mean, you've seen everything that's taken place over the last couple of days, and from the look, the likes of it, and the appearance is going to continue day after day after day. It's crippling and paralyzing if you concern yourself with the day-to-day things that come up. Fortunately, I don't have to do that.
He's Rams head coach Jeff Fisher here on PFT Live and NBC Sports Radio. There was a report this week that you've given Sam Bradford, your quarterback, permission to seek a trade. My understanding is when you were in the press conference earlier today, you said that's not accurate.
That is not accurate, right. Don't know where that came from. I'm betting on Sam. Had some really good meetings. One thing about Sam this year, especially difficult, the injury, the second time around. He came back. He was there every day. He traveled with us. He got every call. We had a great visit after the season was over. He's really excited. Excited about the move with Frank Cignetti as our coordinator. He even had dinner with Chris Winkie last week in St. Louis, and is very excited about that hire. So he's doing well. I don't know when he gets back on the field, but our expectation is he comes back as our starter. Realistically, I have to deal with the what-ifs, because we've been dealing with him not being available. So that's either is through two means, through free agency or through the draft, or both. I don't know. But we have to address it as an organization. But I'm counting on him. I'm betting on Sam.
We're here on PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio with Rams coach Jeff Fisher. The fact that the same ACL went twice, fluke? Or was there a problem with the graft?
With the graft, no. It's just bad luck to me. And both times, he had a brace on, you know. And I'm thinking about when he comes back taking the brace off. I'm not blaming the brace, but it's just, you know, it's just bad luck. It's happened to other players before. Players have had back-to-back ACLs and come back and played 6, 8, 10 years, you know. He just has to get it behind him and go play. And I don't think there's any reason why he doesn't.
Sean Hill is due to be a free agent. Any expectation that he'll be back?
Love to have him back, yeah. We're talking. Like to get him back. Like what he did, his body of work. No, he's not a 16-game, you know, franchise quarterback. But he's competitive, and he knows how to play, and he'll give you a chance. And that's also the case with Austin, too.
You've paid Sam Bradford a lot of money over the past several years. Is there an effort to try to extend his contract, knock down his cap number, maybe pay him less to reflect where he is
right now? I think that makes sense. You know, I haven't had the conversation. I don't do those things. I don't ask a player to take less money and then ask him to play hard for you. But I think that makes sense in the big picture. And if I'm speaking for Sam, Sam wants to get back on the field and play. He's competitive. He wants to win. He wants to prove that, you know, he can be the guy that everybody thought he would be.
He's Jeff Fisher, Rams head coach here on PFT Live and NBC Sports Radio. You mentioned Frank Cignetti, the new offensive coordinator, son of former West Virginia University Frank Cignetti. You got a couple of my West Virginia guys coming into their front end of their prime, and Tavon Austin and Stedman Bailey. What do you expect out of them in 2015?
Improvement. That's one of the things that I talked to Sigs about during the hiring process is got to get the ball to these guys. How do we do that? I have complete confidence that that's going to happen. Tavon came in last week and snuck up on me in my office and gave me a hug and told me how fired up he was just checking in. So we need to get the ball in their hands. Stead, outstanding player. You know, obviously that punt return against Seattle, we called the Mountaineer. And Stead's a big-time special teams player and a productive receiver for us. So they're great young pros.
Jeff Fisher, Rams head coach, here with us on PFT Live and NBC Sports Radio. One of the issues that you had this year, and it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. Good thing you rise up and beat teams that maybe you shouldn't beat. But week in, week out, it doesn't seem like that same focus and intensity is there. What do you do in 2015 to get the guys to play every week like they do against the Seahawks and 49ers?
I think what happened this year is we were ready to play every week. We had the youngest team in the league, and we couldn't overcome young mistakes. And so, you know, that's our focus. We ended up healthy with the group at the end of the year. They had some extra games left in them, so we're doing things right. We got to be more productive on offense. You know, our defense came on the second part of the season. We did play a stretch there when the season came out. I remember you and I having a conversation with this. We had an 8-game stretch in the middle of our season. 7 of those games were against playoff teams from last year, and the 8th team was with the Cardinals, and they were 10-6. So we had a competitive stretch, and so that coupled with the fact that we're young, I think, you know, that's the reason for the inconsistency, but we got to put that behind us.
Rams coach Jeff Fisher is here on PFT Live and NBC Sports Radio. You're also a member of the competition committee. This is the time of year that they start to put the wheels in motion. Any changes expected as it relates to replay review for 2015? And I know it's still weeks away.
We're in the initial stages. We have meetings starting next weekend. For a week where we'll get into the serious discussions. Numerous proposals from different clubs to look at different options or expand replay to include different penalties. We'll look at it. We'll discuss it. Those kind of things will be voted on. You understand the process. You know, some of the other things that we'll be discussing, obviously we're concerned about point emphasis and sportsmanship and taunting and all those things. Player safety stuff appears to be real good right now. We're just in the initial stages. The committee's got, like I said, a week, and we'll crank some stuff out and we'll let them vote on it.
It seems like players have adjusted over time to the expectations when it comes to the target area for hits, the helmet-to-helmet hits on defensive players. It feels like that's gotten under control. Have you sensed that players are starting to learn
numbers,
it?
The numbers reflect it. By that, I mean the number of fines that were levied, and then the number of penalties and the number of hits, they're down significantly in that area, the hits on defenseless receivers. So the defensive backs and the linebackers understand they're changing their techniques, which is good. And oh, by the way, the concussion numbers are down. And that was the objective of the committee at the directive of the commissioner to make those adjustments. And so those type of things are working for us.
What's your feeling, Coach, on whether those hits on defenseless players should be subject to replay review? Because if they get it wrong on the field, you're talking about a 15-yard field position in most cases. 15, should that be reviewable?
What we have to do is be, if you go down that path, you have to be very specific on what's reviewable and what's not. Because a defenseless player is not only that receiver, but a defenseless player is the quarterback. Mm-hmm. A defenseless player is also the long snapper. Defenseless player is any player covering a kick that gets hit, from on a peel back block. So where do you draw the line? So you can I just got a glimpse of the things that we're going to be discussing next week.
Any attempt to further define what a catch is in the wake of the Dez Bryant? It looked like a catch, but it wasn't a catch play.
Yeah, I mean, we do it every year. The one thing that we have with respect to the catch is we have two standards. We have the standard on the field as play is being officiated, and then we have a replay standard. And this is one area in the game where I think those standards are really close. Most of the other areas, you, for example, defense pass interference, you can't ever go there because the standard's different. So we're close, and I think we all understand it. We'll continue to look at it. We'll talk about it. You don't want to go back to the bang bang to the catch 2 feet down, because now you're gonna go backwards as far as defenseless players and the hits and things like that. Bottom line is defenders are going to separate the receiver from the ball any way they can. But, you know, I think this, we understand the standard. You don't like the way it looks, and you should be a catch, but because of the replay standard, I think we have to stay with those specifics.
Well, you got a lot going on, both with your team and with the league, whether it's in St. Louis, L.A., or elsewhere. We wish you all the best, and thanks, as always, for some of your time.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
There he is, Jeff Fisher, head coach of the Rams. We'll be back with more PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio. Welcome back to PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio here in Indianapolis, site of the 2015 and pretty much every scouting combine, Lucas Oil Stadium. Joining us now, member of the CSN family, Jeff Mosher of CSNPhilly.com. So when is Chip Kelly going to pull the trigger and move all the way up to number one to get in position to get Marcus Mariota?
Yeah, we keep waiting. Any day now, right? New report. It's a good question, Mike. You know, to go from 20 to 6 obviously means you have to give up a lot. But Chip Kelly has spoken already of Mariota so highly that, and you know he's an unconventional thinker by nature, that you can't dismiss the idea that he would give up a lot to go get Mariota. Then the problem becomes, well, you just had a pretty good offense. All right, yeah, you need your quarterback, you got it. You expect to be a good offense. Again, what about the defense that's been giving up points left and right for the last 2 years? How do you not address that?
And moving from 20 to 6 presumes he'd be there at 6, that mm-hmm. the Buccaneers don't take him at 1,
right.
The Titans don't take him at 2. No one trades up 3, 4, or 5 because those three teams aren't looking for a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And then number 6 you have the Jets. Nick Foles plus something to move up 14 spots. Any sense, and I know it's early in the process, but any sense of what the Eagles would be willing to do to get up to 6 if Mariota's sitting there?
Well, I think they'd actually be willing to give up a lot. And I do think they would move on from Nick Foles. And the interesting thing when you mentioned the Jets there at 6 is that their head coach is Todd Bowles, who got to see Nick Foles his rookie year. And I know he was impressed. I mean, remember, Nick's rookie year, that team was a mess. Four of the five linemen were almost street free agent signings. He still completed 62% of his passes, averaged 240 yards per game. Todd Bowles saw it both as the D-backs coach and then the defensive coordinator in a very awkward year. So, you know, they've got the Geno Smith problem over there. One thing that Todd said was quarterbacks can't be turning the ball over. And we saw what Nick did 2 years ago with that 27-2. So I could see there being some interest there.
And we've heard Chip Kelly say so many times as we talked to Jeff Mosher of CSN Philly here on a PFT Live and NBC Sports Radio that the draft is a crapshoot. There are no sure things.
Right.
We don't know what these guys are going to do. Well, there's a guy that Chip knows what he's going to do. He knows what Mariota can do. Do you think that makes him more inclined to say, I don't care about what I have to give up. I'm going for the sure thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's that infatuated with Marcus Mariota. I mean, he knows him better than anyone. He's already come out and said he thinks that Marcus Mariota thinks like Peyton Manning. If that doesn't tell you what he thinks about Mariota, nothing will.
Maybe he should stop saying those things.
Maybe he should, because you know other teams who are picking at the top are going to use the Eagles as leverage to try to get more trade bait from someone who may want Mariota and to leapfrog the Eagles.
That's the thing, 3, 4, and 5. If he does get past the Titans at 2, mm-hmm. 3, 4, and 5 become the hot spots for a trade,
right,
where someone could jump past the Jets,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe the Eagles would have to even go up higher than that if that's what Chip decides to do.
And again, that's the problem. If he even with trading Foles, Mike, you're going to have to give up more. You're gonna have to give up second round picks. You're gonna have to have third round picks, and you can't plug all their holes defensively with free agents. As the Eagles have learned in the past, you don't build the team through free agency. Learn the hard way, I should say. So they need draft picks. They gotta address it. It's not just cornerback and safety. D'Amico Ryan's coming off an Achilles. They need an inside linebacker, if not now, for at least next year or down the road. The defensive line has been strong, but there's going to be fluidity. Outside linebacker, if Brandon Graham walks, they only have Connor Barwin, Marcus Smith, who has obviously had a bust first-round year, and then really no depth there. So they've got so many areas on defense they need to address. It's hard to see them mortgaging all these draft picks.
He's Jeff Mosher of CSN Philly here on PFT Live and NBC Sports Radio. mortgaging the future is one thing if you're going to be there for 5 years, mm-hmm. but isn't there a nagging sense that Chip may just decide after any given year, including 2015, that's it, I'm done, I'm going back to college, which makes it more easy to give up a bunch of future picks because you're not going to be there to use them anyway.
I would be very concerned about that as an Eagles fan, wondering about the direction of the franchise. I think already it's concerning, Mike, that you have the kind of this uneasy, awkward situation here where you have Chip and Howie, who obviously had a power struggle, and Howie's kind of pushed aside from a personnel point, but he's there, and he's now got an extension, which almost gives the message that the owner wasn't sold that Chip Kelly was going to stick around very long and that he's going to want Howie to maybe reassume the power 2-3 years down the road, maybe sooner, if Chip leaves. And so if your mindset is that Chip might leave, how are you going to entrust him to then go ahead and, as you mentioned, give up the farm to get this guy? He could set the franchise back a long, long time.
And he has the power to do it if he chooses to. That's mm-hmm. what's fascinating. You look at Howie Roseman, Executive VP of Football Operations. Same thing happened in Washington. Bruce Allen moves into that job. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great. You give up the power, you take the short-term hit, but you don't have accountability anymore.
Absolutely.
And you've got security. And I think people do believe Roseman's going to be there a lot longer than Chip Kelly ever will be.
Well, I mean, he's one of the first people I've ever seen get a demotion and then a pay raise. So that just shows you right there that the owner really, really trusts him and thinks highly of him. And honestly, even before that, you knew the owner thought highly of him because how he's worked his way up the ladder. And if you remember, the owner kicked Joe Banner, his boyhood friend, out of the organization to keep promoting Howie.
Last couple of minutes with Jeff Mosher of CSN Philly here on PFT Live and NBC Sports Radio. Last year at this time, we would have been shocked at the eventual development with DeSean Jackson being dumped by the Eagles. I remember some rumors started to pop up. People were like, that's crazy. Next thing you know, it happened.
Right.
Is LeSean McCoy going to be this year's DeSean Jackson?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think there's a difference in the situations. You know, LeSean has never been in trouble. There's never even been reports of him hanging around in the wrong crowd. And LeSean's a team guy. I really do believe he wants to win, whereas sometimes people felt DeSean would like to win but also like to be the guy who's making the team win. You know, LeSean wants to win. He does like to be a part of it. I know he was frustrated by the year he had, although he did finish top five in the league in rushing. And Chip likes to run, and it's hard, even though you can get a running back, it's hard to replace a LeSean McCoy. A big guy is Deuce Staley, who's the running back's coach. Remember, he was retained from Andy Reid's staff. He and LeSean are close, and I think Deuce is kind of the glue for those guys that just keeps them together. So I'd be shocked if LeSean was just outright cut.
Now, one of the reasons DeSean was cut is because he's not a big receiver.
Right.
Jeremy Maclin's not a big receiver.
Right.
Jeremy Maclin's going to be a free agent. Are they going to break the bank to keep him, or is he going to walk?
Well, I would think that they're going to keep him because even though he's not the biggest receiver, if you let him walk, who do you have? You now have Riley Cooper, who is a big receiver, but hasn't given you much last year. You have Josh Huff, who didn't really have a very good rookie year either. Jordan Matthews, I don't think, will be an outside receiver in this league. I think he was made for the slot. So what are you going to do? You're gonna have to go find a wide receiver in free agency. So I would think if they can't work out an extension, and I think they will, I think the market has to be set first. I think Dez Bryant probably has to either get tagged or an extension first. If they don't, then I think the Eagles will have to use the franchise tag and then buy themselves some time to work out that extension.
And don't rule out the possibility of the draft. Mike Mayock was in that spot yesterday, had some great takes on why young receivers are so much better now than they used to be, why so many were successful last year. So just another wrinkle to explore. Okay, we got to take a break. Thanks for some of your time. Jeff Mosher of CSN Philly. We'll be back with Peter King of the MMQB.com and Football Night in America right after this. Welcome back to PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio here in Indianapolis, site of the Scouting Combine, Lucas Oil Stadium. Our good friend Peter King of the MMQB.com and Football Night in America. Now, this is how we usually stand, right? In the past, it's been the other way. This is more familiar.
That's right. Where's our Microsoft Surfaces?
Yeah, we don't have those. Yeah. We usually don't have these. We usually are wired up and good to go.
You look really pretty, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I feel pretty.
How about me?
You look pretty, too.
Thank you. Yeah.
Seattle Mariners.
Yeah.
You were in – why were you at the Duke North Carolina game the other night?
Buddy of mine, he went to Duke – and it's been sort of an adult bucket list thing of his that he wanted to go to the Duke Carolina game at Cameron Indoor Stadium. And so he just said this year, hey, we're going. And so we procured tickets at great cost, went to the game, and just had the time of our lives. It was fantastic. You know what was so cool there, Mike? You've heard about this Krzyzewskiville outside the thing where kids go in tents. you know, and do this. Get this. The kids who tented to get tickets to the Carolina Duke game entered their tents on the night of the AFC and NFC championship games. That's how long they were there, since whatever that was, January 19th, or whatever, I forget what it was, but over 4 weeks they slept in tents so they could be at this Duke Carolina game. That's
Did you get close enough to any of the tents to smell whether or not they were smoking things that would be legal where the Seattle Mariners
play? I have no comment on that, Mike. No, it was nothing. There were some funny smells, but they were not marijuana related.
He's Peter King of the MMQB.com here on PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio. How many teams are going to move to Los Angeles?
14. I don't know. I mean, look, I think, Mike, one of the things, talking to some people today about this story, obviously you're referring to the story that Sam Farmer in the LA Times wrote where he said that there was going to be a site right by one of the freeways that the Chargers and the Raiders were entering into serious discussions to build this stadium and all this stuff.
And the two teams have since announced that that is indeed the case.
Yeah. And you know what's so interesting about that whole story to me? First of all, can you imagine, like, the Cowboys and the Eagles getting in discussion to go do something together? I mean, isn't this bizarre that it's the Chargers and the Raiders doing something
well,
together?
It shows you how desperate they are.
It really does, yeah. And, you know, I've talked to a bunch of people, both since the Ram decision announcement and this one, and basically saying, what's the most logical scenario? And the most logical scenario is that two teams will move. And basically, this is a high-stakes game of musical chairs. Very high stakes. Because originally, you might say, because my first thing is, the Chargers don't have the money to do this. The Raiders don't have the money to do this. How does it make it any better if two teams that need a big hand in financing are going to try to build a $1.7 million stadium? I guess logically you would say, okay, they each get $200,000 in the G, or $200 million rather, in the G4 money from the NFL. Okay, and then how much money realistically can each side bring to the table in terms of PSL money? Can the Oakland Raiders raise $300-500 million in PSL money? That's where I would really have my doubts, whether they could raise all that much money. And plus, I think there's one other factor at play here, Mike. I really think the league, of all these teams talking about moving, I just think the league does not want to leave the San Diego market. They love having a team in San Diego, not only because maybe if they ever do get a stadium, they could be in the Super Bowl rotation because everybody loves going to San Diego, but I also think that they just feel that that's a great NFL city. And no one will ever say anything disparaging about St. Louis, but I think people in the NFL feel that a St. Louis Oakland combo platter in Los Angeles makes more sense than a San Diego Oakland combo platter.
He's Peter King of the MMQB.com here on PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio. Adrian Peterson also making some news this week. Mike Zimmer stood right there yesterday, the coach of the team, and acknowledged for the second time in roughly a month that if Peterson is dead set against playing for the Vikings, they're going to work something out to let him go. Now, others in the organization won't say that.
Right.
Zimmer has, and it sounds like Peterson is at least inclined to be dead set against. How do you see it playing out?
I think that has something to do with what happens to DeMarco Murray. Became very, very protective about DeMarco Murray when all these other guys would, hey, come and play for us, and hey, make sure before you make a decision, you come and talk to our team. Witten and Romo badly want him back. And I think for a long time, we all thought that, well, they're going to pay Dez Bryant, and if DeMarco Murray will take a hometown discount, they have a chance to get DeMarco Murray back. But if he goes for the last buck, he'll go somewhere else. I still probably feel the latter because I think the Cowboys are going to try to get him back for something less than what he could get on the market. But the question now, Mike, is what in the world is a running back worth on the open market? It's a total change of philosophy in the last six, seven, 8 years as to paying running backs. Who pays running backs anymore?
And you've got to at least be willing to make the guy your workhorse. Why pay him? If you're going to have a two or three-man rotation, why do it? And how many teams out there? You got Seattle, you got Dallas, you got Minnesota, right now inclined to have a workhorse running back.
And you asked me, so you asked me about Adrian Peterson. The reason I brought up DeMarco Murray is that I believe that if DeMarco Murray leaves Dallas, Jerry Jones will be all over Adrian Peterson. You know, to me, that reminds me of when Jerry Jones signed Deion Sanders. He basically, you know, he looked at Deion Sanders. Remember, he signed that $13 million bonus? We put him on the cover of Sports Illustrated. And all of a sudden, that was the big star that Jerry wanted. Just remember, Jerry Jones and stars, they're very, very important to him. The one other team, though, on the outside I would look for with Adrian Peterson, for the Arizona Cardinals.
Absolutely.
Bruce Arians.
Absolutely.
Bruce Arians would make Adrian Peterson very, very happy. But the problem is right now, they're starting to have to pay a lot of people.
Yeah, and for a while I thought maybe it would be a Larry Fitzgerald for Adrian Peterson trade stayed up.
$11 million for Larry Fitzgerald. That's a lot of money for a guy who's not going to be their number one receiver.
And not even their number two, possibly. And that's going to get a lot of other receivers potentially paid even more money.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you know, I'm noticing we talked about the dynamics in the running back market and how they're becoming devalued with more and more rookie receivers having an impact right away. And Mike Mayock was here yesterday, and he thinks there are reasons to believe it's a trend, that maybe receiver starts to go the way of running back, where you don't need to overpay a receiver.
Well, it's because there are so many teams running so many offenses now. The spread offense is developing these receivers. And you know what, Mike? We've talked about this in the last few years. Why are quarterbacks so NFL-ready right away? Because a lot of teams play in the spread. One of the reasons they're so ready right away is that these 7-on-7 passing camps, going back to 7th, 8th, 9th grade, all through high school, all of these kids going to the Manning Passing Academy. Well, some receivers are doing that stuff.
Somebody's
too.
Catching those passes.
Somebody is catching the passes. So you start doing all these things. You're developing these receivers at a younger age. And, Mike, I want to see the long-term health of Julio Jones, Calvin Johnson, Andre Johnson. It used to be, remember, Art Monk lasted till he was 34 or 35. Are receivers going to start to go the way of running backs, where they start to have a lower shelf life on them, just like the way running backs are? So in other words, maybe you don't want to pay the 27-year-old franchise receiver. How many killer shots can Dez Bryant take? And will he still be really good in year four of this new contract with Dallas?
And you know, it's funny. Thomas Dimitroff was here yesterday, the Falcons GM, and he was far more equivocal about Julio Jones than I ever dreamed he would be. I thought it was a no-brainer. They're going to work something out with Julio Jones, and who knows now? You got to look at the factors. Who else is available? How much less can I get him for? And you really do have to have that willingness, like teams have with running backs. Rip the name off of the jersey, forget about what he's done, ask yourself what he's going to do, and how much it's worth it to you.
Here's the thing. I think what teams like Seattle and New England have done, they've re-emphasized every smart personnel man in the league. You look at the Patriots this year. They go get Jonathan Casillas. They go get Ayers, you know, linebacker from Tennessee, basically trading nothing to get these guys. And they become contributing players on their team. No one in New England, other than Tom Brady, and no one in Seattle, they got a few more players. Bill Belichick doesn't fall in love with players. It's like what Tom Brady's dad said in the New York Times. You know, it could end ugly. You know, it's not going to end pretty, because Bill Belichick believes in the guys who are playing well for him today. John Schneider learned a hard lesson with Percy Harvin, because I think deep down inside, you gave him sodium pentothal right now, he said, wish we kept Golden Tate and wish we never traded for Percy Harvin. But good personnel guys are going to make decisions in which you're not going to be married to one guy. They're going to be fine going with lesser guys, lower draft choices, because they trust what they can draft in the lower rounds.
Well, great stuff as always, Peter. Thanks for some of
your
time.
All right, Mike,
we'll be talking
to
you again soon. Peter King of the MMQB.com. We'll be back with more PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio. Hour number two of PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio on this Friday, February 20, from the Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. And we're now joined in person by the guy who dropped a bit of a bombshell last night. I was asleep. I had to wake up. Sam Farmer, the LA Times. So, Sam, eventually will every team in the NFL be located in Southern California?
Not Southern California, but I think up and down the coast of California, we're going to have...
It could be the California Football League.
Yeah, matter of fact, that's a good idea. And I'm glad to hear that I woke you up out of bed and caused you a little problem last night.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. There are far worse things that could cause me problems in the middle of the night, though, the news of a proposal between the Chargers and the Raiders to build a stadium. And Carson, how did this all come to be?
Well, this is – we've been going around and around forever, and I think the fact that last month when Stan Kroenke said he was going to build a stadium at Hollywood Park, it forced the hand of Dean Spanos. And I think if Stan had not announced, I think the Chargers would be where they are and where they have been for the last 14 years working on a solution there.
Whether it's Felix Unger and Oscar Madison or dogs and cats living together, as Bill Murray once said, how do you get the Chargers and Raiders to work together on building a stadium?
That is a bizarre combination. And certainly in the old days, if you had Alex Spanos and Al Davis working on a stadium, that would be quite strange. But, it's a new era, and now the Suns have taken over. I think the Raiders would just be happy that they're on equal footing with the team. And it's not a situation like going in as a second tenant into a Hollywood Park stadium. It really sets up well for the Raiders. They've landed, if this truly comes to fruition, the Raiders have certainly landed on their feet.
He's Sam Farmer, the LA Times, here on PFT Live and NBC Sports Radio. Broke the news of the Chargers-Raiders joint proposal in Carson, California. How do they pay for it?
Well, it's selling PSLs. It's $400 million in G4 money, $200 million per team. It's selling the naming rights. It's all the revenue streams that you'd expect that would be ramped up going from a smaller market to the nation's number two market. And, it's putting in some of your own money, but it's going to be a privately financed stadium. Again, if it goes through, I think there are going to be a lot of twists and turns between now and the time this actually happens.
What do you think the league's reaction to this will be? Because it quickly has become a chaotic situation where you've got three teams showing intent to move to L.A. There's a relocation procedure in place. The Chargers and Raiders have said, we plan to respect it. Stan Kroenke, the owner of the Rams, has said nothing. Of course, he never says anything. How is the league going to process this?
Well, I think the league is in closer touch with the Rams than we might know or are led to believe. I mean, Stan's silent with us. I don't think Stan's necessarily silent with the league. But I think if I can plug PFT, I think he did a great job of pointing out one of the real issues. I mean, this is where Roger Goodell is going to make his money trying to sort through this, because in the past, the league's been able to sort of blow off people who are proposing a site in L.A., but now we're talking about owners and, sort of the lifeblood of the league. And these guys are, you can't punt on this situation. And so that's going to be a real challenge for the league, because it conceivably could create a divide among the owners.
Could you see Stan Kroenke moving the Rams to Inglewood without league approval?
I don't think that's going to happen. I think people assume that because he doesn't say anything, but I don't think there's a track record of Stan Kroenke going sort of off the reservation. So I think he's going to abide by the process like the Raiders and the Chargers are going to. And it can be a true beauty contest between the two proposals.
He's Sam Farmer, the LA Times, here on PFT Live and NBC Sports Radio. There's a local political reality to this. And you look at Dean Spanos and his clout. You look at Stan Kroenke and whether and to what extent he has clout in California. I tend to tip the scale toward Dean Spanos. You look at his political leanings, contributions, the infrastructure he has. Do you believe that Dean Spanos would have a better chance than Stan Kroenke of making things happen that need to happen to get all the approvals legally so you can build a stadium?
Well, Stan Kroenke's almost there anyway. They've collected all the necessary signatures to get a ballot measure. And Dean will get there. I don't necessarily say it's local politics, and largely because these are privately financed stadiums in California, I don't think politics factor in quite as much as they do in other parts of the country. And if you want to say, Dean's political influence, well, Dean's a big Republican, and the mayor of San Diego is Republican, and Dean and the mayor of San Diego aren't exactly on the same page right now. So So I don't know if it's political contributions that are going to get it done. I think ultimately the Chargers and Raiders are going to get their site entitled. I think certainly the Rams are going to get theirs entitled. And it'll be a neck-and-neck run down the stretch. You know, to mix metaphors, it's going to be a horse race to see who wins. But I don't think either group is going to hit a particularly big political roadblock in California.
But you're not going to see two stadiums and three teams.
No way. No. It's hard enough to get one stadium built. We've spent 20 years trying to do that. Two stadiums is inconceivable. Lee doesn't want to dish out all that G4 money. And three teams to flood the market. I'm having a hard enough time to wrap in my head around two teams at once, which I can't think of any like example in all sports. When you drop two teams in simultaneously into a market, even a market as big as Los Angeles, and a market that's lost three NFL teams. I mean, this is not a turnkey market where we're guaranteed to have a successful franchise. I mean, L.A.'s lost teams.
The three teams that want to go back are the teams that previously left Los Angeles. We're wrapping up here with Sam Farmer of the L.A. Times regarding this fairly stunning news. What a week it's been for the Chargers. The week started with the Chargers taking the gloves off with the folks in San Diego saying, don't make us a phony proposal, don't rely on political cover. And now it's clear what the Chargers were doing behind the scenes. Why do you think this has all just exploded in the last week or so?
Again, I go back to the decision of Stan Kroenke last month to, you know, I think of it as a game of musical chairs and three teams circling two chairs. And when Stan Kroenke last month announced he was going to build an 80,000-seat stadium in Hollywood Park, that's when the music stopped. And everybody now is running for those chairs. And, you know, that's why I think it's gotten very exciting lately.
One thing I've heard in the last 12 hours, the idea that maybe the stadium proposal at Englewood, giving its proximity to the LAX flight path, that that could end up posing a problem. Have you heard anything along those lines?
Well, I know that I talked to Tom Ridge about that, the first Homeland Security director. And I know that there are concerns about having a not only is it in the landing path of an airport, but it's really the only landing path of the airport. You don't come at it from different directions. I don't know. I think that has, they think about height, the height of stadiums. It might affect that. I don't think that'll be a huge snag.
And you have international flights coming in there, too, that aren't subject to the same level of security necessarily that we use.
It's certainly a consideration. I don't think you can dismiss that in the post 9/11 world. I think smaller airports are concerned, too, but you could also look and say, well, MetLife Stadium's in a flight path. Levi's Stadium is in a flight path. So it's just a reality of building a stadium near a large metropolitan center that you're going to have those issues. And, you know, I'll tell you what might be affected, blimps. Can you fly a blimp over the stadium when you're in the flight path? I don't think you can do that. So,
Sam Farmer of the LA Times here on PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio. What's your gut tell you, if anything, at this point?
My gut tells me that we're going to get a team in LA. Most likely 2016. I know that sounds obvious.
Where in 2016, though? Coliseum, Rose Bowl, Dodger Stadium?
Oh, lot. If it's two teams, I think you got to play at two different venues. And it would be Coliseum to Rose Bowl, I would think. If it's one team, probably the Coliseum. You start training people to head that to that part of Los Angeles for their football on Sundays. But the only thing I can say right now, which is a big step as far as I'm concerned, is I think something's going to happen. It's built to a critical mass now, and I have not believed that over the last 20 years.
And doesn't the commissioner just have to get the three owners in a room and say, we got to work this out. We got to come
Absolutely.
Up with a solution, and this is what you're going to agree to. It's for the good of the game. We can't have this chaos. We can't have uncertainty in three different markets for the 2015 season where everybody feels like they have a lame duck team.
Yeah, not only that, you can't have uncertainty. You can't have three different teams say, we are leaving, and then send one of them back to their market with his tail between
his
legs.
That's not going to be good for anybody.
No, that's a terrible situation. So they definitely need to solve one of these situations. And in that sense, the closest might be the Rams to getting something done. They'd be leaving money on the table the money that doesn't exist now in San Diego or Oakland.
Well, great stuff as always. Congratulations on breaking the story, and we'll be checking out more of your stuff as this drama continues to unfold.
Thanks, buddy.
There he is, Sam Farmer, the LA Times. We'll be back with more PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio. Welcome back to PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio. We just spent some time talking about the three teams that would like to move to Los Angeles. Let's now talk to a guy who runs a team that will not be moving to Los Angeles, Dave Caldwell, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Isn't it amazing that all that talk of the Jaguars moving just went away? It just like that, just gone.
Well, I think a big credit goes to our owner, Shad Khan. As you know, and we've talked about before, he's a tremendous owner. Even though he's only owned the team for a handful of years, he's wise beyond his years.
And he's been very patient in giving you guys the opportunity to build something. Not many owners are patient anymore. They want quick fixes, quick results. Why do you think Shad Khan is as patient as he's been?
Well, I think it comes with communication. And it goes back to the interview process when I interviewed with the team and really being realistic with where we were at the time and what we needed to do to get this team on track for sustainability for a long period of time. And I'm not patient myself either, so this has been challenging not only for our ownership but for myself and for our coaches, but it's the right thing to do to get us to where we need to be.
And he had some recent comments that suggested maybe he's going to be a little bit less patient or maybe a little bit more demanding. Do you feel any increased pressure going forward?
I don't. I think, and Chad knows this, any pressure that I feel is what I put on myself, and same with Coach Bradley. I think the great thing about Shad is our communication, and anything that he may say publicly, we talk about behind closed doors. And obviously, we have to show results, and nobody denies that. But we knew that these first 2 years that we needed to get a core of good young players, develop those players, and now in year three was the year that we have to make a difference. And that's a difference in our roster and hopefully a difference in our record, too.
He's Dave Caldwell, Jacksonville Jaguars general manager entering his third season. What do you think the biggest impediment has been the first 2 years, just the quality of the roster you inherited?
Well, I never want to make an excuse. I think it was our decision to go young. It was our decision to do it through the draft and build through the draft. I think everybody in the NFL says, we're going to build it through the draft. And then after a year or 2 years, they're going to be like, well, it's not working, so let's do something else. Well, that's not us. We're going to continue, and we're steadfast with that. That's our vision. And we're going to continue this year. We have the opportunity to supplement through free agency. But just going with the young players and having 82 starts with rookies, that's not easy to do anywhere, let alone in the NFL.
Supplement through free agency implies that you're not going to make a big splash, not going to chase any of the big names right away. Is that a fair assessment?
I wouldn't say that's a fair assessment. When I supplement, I say, okay, let's who can make a difference? Who can come in? And you know, free agency is it's a short-term fix. You know, most of the deals are 4 or 5 year deals. If you get three, you're lucky. And it's going to be 1 or 2 years. But now that we have two draft classes, let's get some free agents in there that can make a difference. And then by year 5, year 6, now we have 6 draft classes that can make a difference. And those guys will probably be gone.
The plan going into 2014 was not to have rookie quarterback Blake Bortles play. He played.
Sure.
Played fairly well. What letter grade would you apply to him for last year?
I would say he would be a B+. And I think for us, Coach Braylon and I, we went in the season kind of as protective parents. And they didn't want to throw him to the wolves. And shortly after, we realized that A, he can handle it because he's mentally tough and physically tough. But what he had to deal with, I think you look back at the injury report, and the shoulder was a big concern for him. He would never use it as an excuse. He had some foot injuries that late in the year, but he just kind of kept grinding it and kept battling through it, and had some really productive games. And we talked about it in a meeting and said, hey, if you pull his top 10 plays, I think you'd be hard pressed to find a handful of quarterbacks in the league that can do what he has done from his skill set.
We're here with Jaguars general manager Dave Caldwell. What's the number one thing you think you need to help him with? What area to help him improve?
Well, I think the biggest thing is you look at the studies of, hey, second-year quarterbacks that take a jump to the playoffs. Well, what do they have surrounding them? And we just did this internally, and 8 of those 10 quarterbacks had top 10 defenses. And then I believe everyone had maybe a top 10 runner. So I think those are some of the things that this is a team game, and obviously the focus goes on the quarterback. But we have to do our job from a personnel standpoint, from a coaching standpoint, to surround him with the ability to be productive.
You worked for one of those teams way back when.
That's right.
1999.
Yep.
Indianapolis Colts from 3-13 in Peyton Manning's first year to the postseason year. Of course, Edgerrin James as a rookie.
Sure.
Marvin Harrison. Amazing they were 3-13 with all the talent that he had as a rookie, do you look at Blake Bortles and compare him to anybody who's gotten it done at a high level and say he can be this guy in the NFL?
I don't necessarily compare him, but I do compare that situation a lot. And you look at that team and you said, surprising they were 3-13. Marvin Harrison, Peyton Manning, Marshall Faulk, Ken yep. Dilger, Tarik Glenn. And then we look at the Jacksonville Jaguars that were 3-13, and you don't have those names. And hopefully in 3 or 4 years you say, well, surprised they were 3-13 with Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson and Blake Bortles and Luke Jokel. And so that's what I kind of compare. I compare to situations of where they were and how hard it is to win with youth like that.
One guy that I know you hope at some point we're reflecting on and speaking about as a big name is Justin Blackmon, sure. who's been suspended for over a year now. Any sense on when you may get him back, if ever?
There's not. And, you know, we hope that the league shows some urgency and really kind of focusing on the situation, as well as Justin. Our secondhand reports are he is doing the right things. He has taken the proper steps to get himself help, and he's re-engaged in the program. You know, hopefully the league shows some urgency and focusing on that. And I know Justin is trying to do his part.
What would you like to add defensively to take it to the next level?
I think for us, you know, obviously we always focus on pass rush. Being here in Indianapolis, we're chasing the Colts right now. And they have a dynamic quarterback. And if you can affect the quarterback and protect the quarterback, you have a good chance of winning football games. So defensively, we're always going to focus on that. We have a young secondary that we feel like going in their third year could be really good. And I think speed at linebacker is an important part for us.
Last minute or so with Jaguars general manager Dave Caldwell. What pick do you have?
We have the third pick.
And what happens when Chip Kelly and the Eagles call you up and say, hey, we'd like to trade up 17 spots? Is that something you'd be inclined to do?
Well, I would be this year more so than other years. This is the first year going into it in our third year that we can line up and not have to have a guy come in and start right away for us. So we have some flexibility with our roster, and if we can get a couple of dynamic players versus just one, well, we'd entertain that.
Jaguars general manager Dave Caldwell here just for another minute or so on PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio. Do you want to make a bold prediction, playoffs this year for the Jaguars?
No, we never do. We don't talk about wins. We don't talk about playoffs. We
just anything? 8-8?
We talk about getting better. We'll say
we'll win in London this year.
How about making a difference?
Do you like playing? That's good. Yeah. Do you like playing in London?
Yeah, it's been great for us. It's not only been good for us from a worldwide perspective and branding, but for our team. You go over there for a week, and for our team to bond together and gel together, the camaraderie that they build for that week trip has been great.
You guys seem to play better together coming out of that game than before.
And we think a lot of it has to do with that week there.
You should start asking for week one in London.
How about that? Well, I know this, with the schedulers in the NFL, everything we ask for kind of doesn't happen. So maybe if I don't ask for it, it'll happen, right?
There you go. That's a way to do it. Well, Dave, thanks for some of your time. We wish you all the best going forward.
Thank you, Michael.
Dave Caldwell, Jaguars GM. We'll be back with Mike Maccagnan, the new Jets GM, here on PFT Live and NBC Sports Radio. Welcome back to PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio here in Indianapolis at the Scouting Combine, Lucas Oil Stadium. And pleased to be joined now by the new general manager of the New York Jets, Mike Maccagnan. When you hear that, New York Jets general manager, is there pride? Is there fear? Is there something else?
I think more excitement. You know, it's at the end of the day, you work your whole career to get to a position like this. And then, at least in my case, to get that position and then literally be 40 miles away from where you grew up, you know, again, it's kind of it's a little surreal, very exciting, but more excitement than anything else, I think.
Who have you learned the most from along the way that'll help you in this new challenge?
Well, I've been fortunate enough to spend 20 years in the NFL. I've always worked more or less in the front office, so I've sort of seen everything firsthand. I've had the very good fortune to work with Rick Smith most recently, and before that, Charlie Casserly, both guys that I always felt really kind of, you know, took time to kind of explain things, you know. So when you were, you know, so again, you weren't just doing a job, you were kind of doing your job but learning how to do the next job. And in a lot of cases, especially the college draft process, you sit literally right next to the decision maker, the general manager. Now the only difference is I'm kind of one chair over, which is, you know, a little intimidating but very exciting too.
Who's got the final say in New York if there's any type of disagreement internally on what to do with that sixth overall pick?
Well, I think at the end of the day, technically, I have that control over the draft, in my contract. But at the end of the day, it's not really about power. It's more about just making sure you work well together with the head coach. That's Todd and myself. That's going to be a big thing for us, working through this process to make sure whatever player we identify, is the is first of all accurate in terms of who he is and what he's going to potentially be, but also ideally, basically be a player that fits what they want to do. So we're getting the right players for them, basically.
He's Mike Maccagnan, Jets GM, here on PFT Live and NBC Sports Radio. And you mentioned the relationship with the head coach. Why is it, and you're part of the industry, you haven't been directly involved in these issues, but why is it that it seems like for multiple teams now, the GMs and the coaches can't get along? Isn't that the most important relationship in the organization?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I haven't had a lot of experience with sort of negative environments like that. I think at the end of the day, it's a high pressure business. But I think it kind of goes back to the people and their personalities. So you're going to be in a business where you constantly have to be successful. Okay. We all understand that. That's what we kind of signed on for. But I do think that sort of, that intense aspect of our industry, under duress can bring out sometimes, not always the best quality in people. But at least with Todd and myself, the way we focused on is we're both very similar in terms of our mindsets. We're very team-oriented. I mean, we obviously have respective areas of control. But the whole thing is we're only going to be as strong as we are together as opposed to, working at opposite angles, basically, of any kind of issue.
He's Jets GM Mike Maccagnan here on PFT Live and NBC Sports Radio. What's your main objective here in Indianapolis? What do you want to come away from this process with?
The combine, the most important thing is getting a chance to see these players in an environment where we can really analyze and focus on, what their strengths and weaknesses are. We get a chance to get our scouts and coaches, more so with our coaches, interacting with these players a little bit. We have the ability to interview quite a few of these players, like 60 of them, for example, in formal interviews. But it's really putting them in an environment like what we do at our core is try to project yield, return for what these guys are, and then try to figure out who is better than who in a very simplified way. So this gives us the best environment to do that in.
How much in a 15-minute interview process can you get through to the real guy? Because so many of these guys, especially the top prospects, it's all packaged, it's all rehearsed. How do you get through and get to the real guy in 15 minutes?
Well, there's lots of different things you do. I think, for the most part, what you try to do is you try to get them off schedule. So a lot of these players will basically work on their presentation, and we'll let them do a little bit of that. But I think at the end of the day, we just try to ask questions. We try to get to the kind of what's underneath, underneath them in terms of, making them kind of work off schedule. So that's probably from trying to glean some insight into them. That's probably what we do in that very small window. But we do countless hours in terms of background information, like from people at the schools about these kids. That's where the real backbone of what we do is, really. And then also after this environment, sometimes, sometimes guys will, something may come up in an interview in that short 15 minutes. We still have the opportunity to bring them back into our organization or go see them at their pro day and, again, try to dig a little deeper to make sure we know what these guys are from a character standpoint.
He's Mike Maccagnan, Jets GM here on PFT Live. Have off-field issues become more important in light of what the NFL's gone through over the past year with the Ray Rice situation, the new personal conduct policy, the concept of guys being put on paid leave even before they've had any criminal charges finalized?
Well, I would say I think it's always been there. I don't think we've ever, sort of put less onus or emphasis on it. I think for ourselves, we want to make sure we bring, good people that represent the organization well, obviously, into our organizations. But more importantly, when you have those off-the-field issues, they act as distractions, which at the bottom line affect our ability to go out and, be successful, whether a player gets, suspended by the league and is forced to miss time. I mean, that impacts our ability to do our jobs well. But at its core, though, we want to bring in players that represent our organization well and be good members of the community, because that's kind of what that's what our bottom line goal is. So,
what was your position in Houston when J.J. Watt was drafted in 2011?
I was a director of college scouting.
So you get the credit for that one.
I will say this. There are so many people that are involved in this process, and everywhere from the college scouts to the coaches to the pro scouts to the trainers to all the people that do the background checks on these players, that I don't like when people always want to say, hey, that was my guy, and I was the sole reason for that. But I was a part of that process, very proud of that. But really, it would be doing a disservice to all the other people that work countless hours on these players.
How far has J.J. Watt, though, exceeded your own expectations when you made him the 11th overall pick?
I think it's one of those ones, and that's kind of what we do. That's why we scout these players, because, you know, you try to project what they can become. But when you find a player that totally maximizes all his potential, that's a perfect scenario for us. And really being around JJ, not just from an ability standpoint, and even physically, he's sort of matured from, you know, being a young 21-year-old guy when we first got him to what he is today. It's really just the character of who he is and how hard he works. And literally every play he plays at 100%, which is what you want in any player.
Why is it such a crapshoot, though, that you never know what a guy's going to do in the NFL until he gets to the NFL and gets on the field against other NFL players?
Well, I would say, you know, there's a degree of risk, obviously, in the pro side, but at least you get a chance to see him in a pro environment. The college is a little different because you're dealing with younger athletes, and they still sometimes physically mature. You're dealing with trying to get information about what these guys are from a character standpoint, which is part of our process, which isn't always, you know, you're getting a lot of subjective information and trying to put a value on it. So that's where the college side tends to be where I see it's – that's why a lot of people like to build through the draft, because the college side, you tend to have a lot more, you know, for where you invest the player, the return you get can be so much more dramatic, because they do kind of – they do mature and develop. They're not finished products, really. So.
He's Mike Maccagnan, Jets GM here, PFT Live, NBC Sports Radio. We've got some free agents coming up. One of them, linebacker David Harris, due to hit the market. How much in considering how – to structure an offer, whether to keep him around, how much are you influenced by the possibility that he gets out the door, he goes straight to Buffalo and reunites with Rex Ryan?
Well, I think at the end of the day, I think what you do is you obviously, and David in particular is a player we like very much. You know, we would really, really like to see him, you know, finish his career as a Jet. He started, he's been a highly prolific player for us. We'd love to have him our intention to have him finish his career as a Jet. But again, there's free agency, so it's an open market. Obviously, players have the ability to go out and test the market, see what their worth is based on what other teams say. We don't really gear ourselves up to try to compete against other teams in particular, but what we try to do is put a value on that player, and part of that value is from, you know, what we view him in terms of our organization, and it also equates to a financial investment. So, you know, to me, it's sort of a process you work through, and you try to find an area where, you know, the team and the agent both feel like they got what they want out of it. And with David's case, you know, we're going to go through that process and hopefully find an area where we both feel comfortable and ideally keep him a Jet.
Is your starting quarterback in the building? Is it yes, is it no, or is it to be determined?
Well, I would simply say with the quarterback situation, with a lot of our players, I mean, we still have to go out and work with these guys. So I think the sort of label who the starter is or who the backup is just a little premature. But I do think, you know, obviously, you know, Geno Smith was our starter for a good part of last season, and we're excited about working with him going forward. But again, like everything, we want to try and make every position competitive. So whether it's through free agency or the draft, I mean, we're going to, you know, and it's not just a quarterback position, it's all positions. So
with the 6th overall pick in the draft, there's a chance one of the top two quarterbacks will be available. How closely are you going to look at Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota?
I think every player that we could potentially pick at 6, we're going to vet thoroughly as best we can. We're going to try to make sure we are as accurate in terms of how we assess them and in terms of the potential player they're going to become. So, you know, yes, we will vet them very thoroughly.
Trade down a possibility?
I would say this. I think at 6, it's a nice place to be in the sense that you're close enough to some of the higher picks that you can kind of maybe move up for what it would cost a little less than a team maybe in the teens or further back. But also, it's a nice place to be because, you know, there may be a very good player fall to you at 6 because you don't know how this thing will unfold. Also, being at 6, there's a possibility that teams may want to come up to 6, which is a nice thing to do. But I wouldn't necessarily say, you know, we're locked in to go move up or move back or sit tight. I mean, really the thing we're going to do is stack our board and then let the draft kind of develop and see what kind of comes to us.
Well, good luck as you embark on that process. Congratulations on the new job and all the best going forward. Hope to talk to you again down the road.
Thank you very much. It'll be fun. Right. My pleasure.
Mike Maccagnan, Jets general manager. We'll be back with more PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio right after this. Pro Football Talk Live on NBC Sports Radio is built by the Home Depot. Got an idea? Let's do this smarter and for less, more saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. The Home Depot was founded by Arthur Blank, co-founded. The Atlanta Falcons are now owned by Arthur Blank, and that's the only way I could make a smooth segue, although it's not nearly as smooth when you point out that it's a segue to our next guest. Dan Quinn, new coach of the Falcons. Congratulations on the new job. We had a chance to talk briefly the day you were introduced. Now that you've had a chance to let it all sink in,
yeah.
What's your feeling about your new job?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. It's been a blast. The last couple weeks, it's been exciting. It's been moving. And then having that connection that I got to, you know, partner up with Thomas and going through the evaluation process of the roster, which kind of leads us all the way here into Indy and, you know, see what are the guys here who would also fit into that package. So it's been a blast.
And you've gotten your first experience with the media here, press conferences and
yep.
doing interviews. How do you like that aspect of the job?
You know, I know for us having a chance to connect with the fans and connect with people that you see, you know, just some of the time, it's been great. So, from different sets, different people, I've had a good time doing it.
He is Dan Quinn, the new head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, and the holder of the record for the hammer throw at Salisbury State. Does that still stand?
You know, it was a long time ago, so I would say no.
was that your best event?
You know, I had a great time doing track and field. It was a great balance for me between football and track. In football, where it was just kind of all about the team, you might have played well, but your team didn't play well, you didn't feel good. So in track and field, it was you were really just competing against yourself to see how far you could throw or how fast you could run. So I like that balance in my life. So I've always been connected, you know, to track and field still, and I love watching it still today.
How did you discover you had a skill in throwing the hammer?
You know what? It's not something that you do growing up in the neighborhood. It was just I was in the throwing events. So we didn't do it in high school in New Jersey where I grew up. So when I first saw it in college, I thought it would be something I'd be, you know, interested in doing. And then sure enough, I loved it.
And that's the one where you spin it around and
yep,
then let it go?
Still 16 pounds, but spin it around and let it rip.
You ever let go of it too early?
Oh, yeah.
What happens?
It goes into the chain, onto the track. Yeah, so when you're throwing the hammer, everybody else should
duck.
Look out, right?
Yeah, heads up. Yeah. Dan Quinn, Falcons head coach, here with us. So you said you've already evaluated your roster and working with Thomas to do that. Tell us a little bit about how this relationship is going to be between you and Thomas, because we've seen so many instances in recent weeks of coaches and GMs not being able to work
right
together.
And unfortunately for me, I saw firsthand the importance of it in Seattle with Pete and with John Schneider. So when I had a vision, if I had my opportunity, I knew that relationship was going to be critical to be, you know, seamlessly going through players, seeing it all the same way. So when the opportunity that I could connect with Thomas, like when you first meet someone, you know, okay, this is a guy I'd partner up with and do it. It was that kind of vibe I got from Thomas. So I was thrilled that we were able to partner up and join forces.
You mentioned Seattle, even though you quickly moved on to become the Falcons head coach. Is that still eating at you?
Yes. I think.
How long will it eat at you?
Probably forever. You know, I don't think it's as much fun as you could have competing for a championship. And so when you lose, you don't really know where to put it. And fortunately for me, you know, a day later, I was on a plane getting ready for the opportunity of a lifetime in Atlanta. But you always look back on it. What could you have done different, you know, just to help in one different call, different way to do it? So I had an absolute great time there, unbelievable experience during my 2 years there as the defensive coordinator, and lifelong relationships, friends, the attitude, the mindset of competitors on the defensive side of the ball. It was awesome.
Who have you learned the most from in your time as a coach?
You know what? There's been a lot of guys who I've got so much gratitude for that have helped me along the way. But Pete's been the biggest influence on me. Philosophy, not just scheme-wise, not just X and O, how to see how far you can develop and take the players. So he's had the biggest impact.
We're with Dan Quinn, Falcons head coach here on PFT Live and NBC Sports Radio. How involved will you be in the offensive side of the ball?
You know, I definitely think I can help in that way, knowing how to best support Kyle, how to best support Matt. And so with my, you know, the bulk of my coaching career being on the defensive side, if I can give insight and ways to help, that's how I'm going to do it.
Will it be Kyle Shanahan's offense brought to the Atlanta Falcons and applied to the current and whatever players you may acquire?
Right. And the biggest thing is getting to know our guys so well to how we can attack with them. And that's one of the, you know, the things I did learn from coaches. Find all the uniqueness that a player has, and then let's find ways to pull it out of them. So that's been the big part of the process now, of learning the roster and finding all the things that so many of these talented guys can do and see how we can feature it.
You've got something in common with Mickey from Rocky II, where he was preaching speed to Rocky. Speed's going to be a big part
right.
of what the Falcons do.
Yep. In my first press conference, we talked about being fast and physical and just guys that love to compete and know how to finish. So, and that part of the process begins here. I can't wait to find out which of these guys would, you know, have what it takes to be a part of that. But that speed, that attitude, that effort, that's where it starts, you know, in terms of, you know, building the team in a fashion that you just love to see play. When you guys see us play, I said, man, these guys play hard, and I want that toughness, that finish to come out.
Will they be chasing chickens in training camp?
whatever Nick did in Rocky II, or you know that, you know, we'll find every edge we can use.
I want to see chickens. I will show up if there's chicken chasing at training camp.
Every way to find an edge, we're going to go for it.
And then you cook the chickens, and then you fed the guys at the same time. He's Dan Quinn, Falcons head coach, here with us on PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio. How do you balance, though, speed? I know speed's important, but strength is part of it, too, and other abilities. How do you find the right balance?
I think it's that versatility that you're looking for. Finding, you know, whether it's a defensive end that can play defensive tackle or a linebacker who can play defensive end, a corner who can slide inside to play a tight end who can split out wide, like all the versatility that you're looking for, and finding all the unique stuff that a guy has, it's as fun of coaching, finding all that stuff out. So like that's what this, you know, next part of OTAs, training camp through the draft, is all about.
And versatility is important then, because you can do different things and confuse the opposition or have flexibility in your alignments and just create confusion.
And the more, you know, versatile a guy can become, think of now all the stuff that he can now bring to the team. So every chance we get to show that a guy can do more than one role, and let's keep adding on to it. If they can't, we'll back off. But that's part of the evaluation process, too.
He's Falcons head coach Dan Quinn here with us on PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio. Defensive side of the ball, what's your biggest objective from the standpoint of improving what the Falcons have?
I think one of the main tenets that we're going to go after in terms of, you know, when you're building your defense is affecting the quarterback. And that can be through pass rush. It can be through, you know, the way that you cover and the style that you play. So that attitude, that speed, that relentless attack, that's what we're going to create defensively, the fast and physical mindset. We have a saying, it's not really, you know, what we call, it's how we play it. And so from a scheme standpoint, we're going to try and, you know, feature what the guys do best. But I can't wait to see the effort and the speed.
Will there be a Legion of Boom Atlanta version?
We'll let that play out in terms of the style and the attitude. The most important thing, not just defensively, but for our whole team, is how connected our team can get. I do know that every good team I've been a part of is really close, and so I can't wait to see how these guys connect and how hard they'll play for each other. When you dedicate your effort to another guy, you know, that's usually a pretty, you know, sign that something special is about to happen. So I can't wait to get started with the team there.
Pete Carroll was big on competition in Seattle, the first-team offense versus the first-team defense on Wednesdays. Is that something you'll be doing?
It will, and as competition's, you know, kind of the central theme in the program, and the competition where, like, you and I working against each other, that's when it gets day after day, keep working your skills as hard as you can. There's a real respect factor that happens that way. Like, you're helping me get better, I'm also helping you get better. So that competition is really rooted. It's the way we practice, the way we go after it, and just finding an edge at everything we do.
How do you balance that, though, versus scouting and preparing for the upcoming opponent? Because every Wednesday that is spent ones against ones is a Wednesday not spent on understanding what your opponent is.
We certainly want to give regard to the other, you know, to the team that we're playing. But as it gets toward the end of the week, the focus really then comes back around to us. And at the end of each week, we're going to play to, you know, our strengths and play to our standard. And really, you know, we'd like the other team to have to deal with us as opposed to us trying to always try to worry about what they do.
Give me one guy on the team who really has impressed you based on what you've seen in studying film.
There's been a number. From the defensive side, probably Dez Trufant. You know, I think he's just getting ready to, you know, have his career take off. So I can't wait to get a chance to work with him. We have a special spot for corners, and certainly I had a chance to work with his brother. So he's one in specific that I can tell he's on his way.
What's one area of his game that you're going to work with him the most on to improve?
Really, I thought the thing he can work on the most is his hands and tracking the ball. So he had his hands on, you know, a couple times on the ball and didn't come up with the interception. So the time that now you can take the ball away, that's the thing for him to work on the most. And I can't wait to see him develop.
Pete Carroll is creating a fairly impressive coaching tree on the defensive side of the ball. Gus Bradley to Jacksonville, now you to Atlanta. Chris Richards steps in as defensive coordinator in Seattle. What do you expect from him as a coordinator and beyond?
He's going to do a fantastic job. If you think about all the players that Chris has developed as the DB coach there, now to have that chance to work with the entire unit, he's going to do a terrific job. But, you know, he's the one, you know, from Cam and Earl and Richard and Byron and Jeremy Lane and Walter, like, that all the way brought up through the system. He's a really disciplined technique coach, and I think he'll do a great job.
Now, in the NFC West, it was Seahawks, 49ers as the top rivals the last couple of years. Who do you think your top rival is in the NFC South?
You know, as we're going through it, the main thing is just, like, each game we're going to treat it as a championship game. So the rival part of it isn't as big as just how well can we play. And so as we go through it, they're all important as we're going through. But we won't place one over another in terms of, you know, the importance of it.
What will you say to Pete Carroll before kickoff the first time you face the Seahawks?
Well, it'll be a battle. We're going to go for it. I'll probably talk to him after the game. You know, beforehand, hey, let's see what happens, see who's more ready. And knowing him, he'd say, all right, let's go.
Well, we look forward to that game and every other game. We wish you all the best. Congratulations again on the job. All and don't be throw. Will there be hammer throws at training camp as well?
There will not be.
You should do hammer throws while they're chasing chickens.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. I really
appreciate
it.
All right, we appreciate you taking some time. Dan Quinn, Falcons head coach. We're done. We're leaving. We have PFT on NBCSN at 5 o'clock Eastern time tonight. But after that, I'm leaving. He's leaving. We'll be back in our regular locations on Monday. Have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us here in Indianapolis on PFT Live on NBC Sports Radio.